This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. You can join us each week as we interview those who help Tyler and Longview residents make their lives better. As always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show or any topic you would like us to consider airing on KTBB or In Focus by going to ktbb.com/infocus. Man, I'm excited today. This is Memorial Day weekend. And for those of you who don't know, because a long time ago I was one who didn't, there's a difference between Memorial Day and the other holidays. On Memorial Day, we honor the people that we've lost. And that's what we're here to do this weekend. And my guest, I've had the pleasure already of talking to for about 30, 40 minutes now, and I'm very excited. His name is George Burton. And George is a Vietnam veteran who used dogs to alert the soldiers to the whereabouts of the other soldiers. George, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Excited to be here.
Tell us about when you graduated. Take up when you graduated boot camp. Take us from there.
Right. We went in, I guess it's about 1970. I went into the Air Force and volunteered to be a dog handler. And we went through boot camp and combat training. In combat training, we had a great opportunity to fire every weapon that existed, which was just a whole lot of fun for a young man, because you never knew what weapons would end up in your hands. And then after that, we went through dog school, which lasted about 8 months, where we trained dogs. And it was in Medina, right outside San Antonio. The terrain was similar to parts of Vietnam. And we would work with these dogs and take them from not knowing anything to take them to where they were attack dogs. And once we completed that training, we got our orders. And we all knew we were going to Vietnam. So, and I chose that because I'd heard so much about Vietnam, and I was concerned if I went about how it was going to be. Am I going to be out there with a bunch of drugged out GIs or what? So I chose to be a dog handler, and there was nobody in that line anyway. So, and that sealed the deal. You were definitely going to Vietnam. And got my orders, came home for 30 days, and got married because I got serious about life and headed to Vietnam. And my wife, she was a Filipino girl. I went to high school with her. And she moved in with my parents and stayed there while I was in Vietnam. And so we got to Vietnam and got settled in there. Then we got our signed our dogs. And then our job was to protect a big base. The base we were protecting was called Cam Ranh. We had bases all over Vietnam. Cam Ranh, Da Nang, Pleiku, Phu Cat, all over Vietnam. And on the base, there was 10,000 people on this base. And it was kind of surrounded by mountains and hills. And 9,000 of these people on the base didn't even have a gun. They just got up and went to work every morning in the hospitals. And we had fuel tanks down there like they have in Baytown, full of diesel, jet fuel, and gas. And had helicopters and jets flying out of there. So all of these people that worked on all that stuff every day. And we had two hospitals there and administrative buildings there. So these 9,000 people just went to work every morning. And they were a target because the Viet Cong wanted to get in there and do some damage. So we had some layers of security there. The first layer, that closer into the base, we had towers with two riflemen and a machine gun up in the tower, had concertina wire around the whole place. And we had slap flares, not slap flares, but flares.
Well, hold on, for those of you, our audience that don't know, that type of wire is the razor wire.
Right. Okay. So, like they have down on the border.
Okay.
And and along the way in the wire, they had, if someone pulled on the wire, it would set off a flare. And the people up in the, we get the attention of the people in the tower, and they bring down on them. And so they were always trying to come through, and sometimes they did get through. But that was the first layer entered to the base, the closest one in. And then there was another layer of guys were in Jeeps driving around in tracks, kind of like a tank, but it's a track with guys in it.
Like personnel carrier.
Personnel carrier, but it was armored and had about a six-man team in that. And then the next one, we were the furthest ones out, about 4 or 5 miles out in the jungle. And we surrounded the base with dogs. And they dropped, they would load up onto big trucks every evening at the kennels. And they'd take us out in the jungle about 5-6 miles and drop you off and go over about another half a mile and drop off another dog and another half a mile. And then we surround the place. So the first thing they had to get through to get in was our dogs.
And so dogs, I would think that they would bark.
Yeah,
the dogs, they don't bark?
In training these dogs, the ones that would bark got washed out. And so they'd bring in maybe 15, 20 dogs, and maybe 3 dogs would make it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They'd have to be where they didn't bark, and they'd also have to be where it could tear somebody up.
Okay, well, yeah, that was the plan.
That was the end game, yeah.
So you guys were about a half mile from each other out there sitting on perimeter about 5 miles outside the base,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah.
So you had support by people closer to the base if you had a problem, correct?
Yeah, actually, there was a team of guys on a Jeep, like 3 guys, a driver, a rifleman, and then a guy on the back of a Jeep. And they had call signs, like Whiskey Charlie. And so if I'm on Kilo 36, all these, where we were, we had a number assigned to the area we were at, and it was called Kilo. It's the phonetic alphabet. Mm-hmm. And so say I'm on Kilo 36, and so I call in, say, hey, this is Kilo 36. I got a 10-5-5. In other words, that's a K-9 alert, and my dog has alerted, and I'm starting to move in that direction. Well, when Whiskey Charlie heard that with his Jeep, they're starting to head in my direction.
Gotcha.
It might take them 10 minutes to get there, but they're coming, because if things broke out, they'd be there pretty quick to help me.
And the enemy that you would come into contact with, would it be a couple of guys at a time? Would it be a squad?
It was pretty much 1 or 2 guys.
Okay.
Because they're carrying explosives.
They're looking for weak spots.
They just want to go in and blow stuff up.
Okay.
They got through, and I'll give you an example. One night they got through, as I think 3 or 4 of them, and they got all the way into one of the hospitals, and they ran down the hall where the hospital was with the soldiers in beds on each side dropping satchel charges. And when they ran out, it blew all those guys up in there. And so that's what they were trying to do in any way they could.
Such close quarters.
Yeah.
That's hard to fathom, which brings me to my next subject we talked about on the way up here. So I had a chance to visit with you before the interview, found out that we actually not that different of people. And I told you I'm a 57-year-old guy, and of all the veterans that I've met in my life, which I'm probably the last generation that even was exposed to the greatest generation.
Right.
You know what I mean?
We're
going to die off. And so I was exposed to those guys, and then you guys, and the Korea guys, then the Vietnam guys. And I've found that some of the Vietnam veterans are some of the most evolved of all the ex-soldiers. And we talk about all the turmoil we have in our world right now and how everything is just crazy and, you know, people are on different sides. And in talking to you, it wasn't a lot different when you went in.
No, it really wasn't. There was so many people against the war, so many people protesting it, and so many people treating you terribly when you came back.
But for some reason, why did you never develop a hatred of those people?
Well, it's very simple. My brother, he was older than me, 8 years older than me, and he went to University of Texas, and he was liberal, and him and his wife protested the war. That didn't go over very well with my dad, but...
Was your dad a World War II veteran?
No.
No,
he never served.
He was okay. He was just a good American.
Just an old cowboy.
Right. Got you. Okay.
Cattleman. And so my brother was a liberal, and they protested the war, and it caused a lot of strife in our family. And I never was mad at my brother for it because I felt I wish he had been in my shoes and I'd have been in his shoes.
Sure. You never know.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right.
It was the same thing back then. But why do you think people of your generation that have served were more open to people having different opinions versus they're not un-American for their opinions, just different?
Yeah, I think the 60s had a lot to do with that, just the evolution of everything that the 60s went through.
You think that was a good time for our country upon reflection?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was a good time. It's the time we had to go through, I think, to become where we are now.
Evolution, baby.
Yeah.
That's how I believe. There are a lot of people that think that was the beginning of the end for us.
Right.
But I actually, when it developed men like you that could be empathetic to somebody's views at the same time going to a foxhole or taking a dog out 5 miles away from anybody with just that companion for a dog, protecting their right to do exactly what you're talking about and not being upset with them, that screams America to me.
Yeah, it does. And another perspective that I see now from 20,000 feet is we built these bases all over Vietnam. Brown and Root Construction Company out of Houston built them. Mm-hmm. Anything that was built in Vietnam was built by Brown and Root.
I did not know that.
We're talking about the roads, bridges, buildings. Brown and Root was there. You can Google it. And so, and George Brown and Lyndon Johnson were best friends, and you can Google that. So
makes sense.
So a lot of money was made by building all these bases. And what did we accomplish? Spent a lot of money.
We did. And so, and that's my question. So you were over there when you were serving. And you saw what you saw. Did you believe in the cause, or did you believe in the country, or both?
I would say both.
Okay.
I knew it was communism. And these people, the South Vietnamese, didn't want to be communist. And they wanted to take over. And eventually they did. So, yeah.
So that was the difference that you saw, was they were just... We needed to be there.
We needed to be there
to stop communism from moving forward. In your mind,
yes. And they were old day terrorists. They didn't mind dying for their country.
Got you. Yes, sir. And the soldiers that you served with, would you say most of them were with the cause of the war, or most of them were drafted into the situation and just wanted to get out alive?
Yeah, we really didn't care about the cause of the war. We're playing the hand we were dealt.
Got you. So you go over there with these young 18, 19-year-old boys.
Yeah.
For all practical purposes, when you get off the plane to a man within 24 hours, I would guess. And do you got were there conversations then about when you got back at the end of the day, or were you deployed out with the dog for 24 hours, or how long was your deployment?
We'd stay overnight and then come in the mornings.
Okay, and they would come pick you up, or you would walk back?
No, the same truck that dropped me off out there. There would be a point that I'd go to for them to pick me up, and I'd wait there, and they'd come, we'd load back up and go back down to the base.
And so you would typically leave it in the evening, right, and come back in the morning?
Right.
So you would have the day to sleep and visit.
Right. And sleep in 110 degrees humidity.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So this humidity we're having right now is no problem for you.
Well, you know, for me, growing up in Houston, humidity was part of our life.
For sure.
But these boys from California and the other places of the country, they really suffered.
Do you think as a country we've learned lessons from Vietnam that we've applied, or do you think that the sacrifices in a lot of ways were in vain, and we're always going to be just going and getting into a police action here and there?
Well, I mean, we didn't learn anything. What did we do in Afghanistan?
That's the reason I'm asking you these questions. Because I always, George, what I'm so profoundly proud about knowing guys like you is that you went over there and you did what you did for our country. And you still have views that could be in line or not in line with someone else. You don't have to apologize for them. You've served your time. You can think any way you want to think and say anything you want
to
say.
Yeah, I can relate to these guys now.
Yes, and that's what. So that's what. Do you see some of this? Sometimes it's almost like false patriotism that we see today. Like they call themselves quote unquote, you know, patriots, but the patriots are the guys that are actually going to sign up and go over there to extend what we think, right?
They didn't walk the walk. They talked the talk. You know what I mean?
It's easier to be a patriot now.
Yeah.
Than it was.
It don't cost you anything. Yeah.
Do you think that some of these? That's exactly what you're. I get it. Yeah. And for the sacrifices that like my grandfather made, you made the sacrifices of the men that we honor this weekend that did not come back.
Right.
Which was the ultimate sacrifice.
Sure.
They did all that, so we can all have our opinions.
Sure.
Not so we can have one opinion.
Right.
And that's what's as a 57-year-old who was I'm 57, so I was obviously a tweener with the wars.
Right.
Way too young to go to Vietnam, a child. Then by the time Desert Storm started, I was almost 30.
Right.
So, you know, and there wasn't a draft, and I wasn't in any hurry to go over there and do what you did. So, but over the time, I just feel that these guys that I see as and women, by the way, these men and women that I see as absolute patriots for their service are different than these people that proclaim themselves patriots purely for their political leanings.
Sure.
But, and with respect to both sides, but just the ones that say, hey, I'm a patriot because I think this way, you would say what to a person you met in that situation that would their cars are stickered up with patriotism and everything else? Yeah. What would you say to them?
I really wouldn't have much to say to them because I don't know their motives for doing that. I don't know what their heartfelt feelings really are.
Which, again, you know, goes back to your philosophy is kind of live and let live.
Yeah.
If they want to put stickers on their car, that's fine with me. Right. I don't know what kind of person they are.
It's America.
Correct. So you would still judge them by their acts, not by what they said.
No, exactly.
I miss that. By the way, while we're here this weekend, remembering Memorial Day, I've had people on the show before that offer services for veterans, and I kind of wanted to give a few of those out a couple times during the interview today.
Yeah.
One is Camp V, and it's you can go to camputtyler.org. The East Texas Veterans Resource Center is helpforvets.com. And these are people who really make vets their cause. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing, huh?
Sure. And some guys do really suffer from it. When you talk about the Afghanistan War, you talk about the Vietnam War. Growing up like I did in the country, we, in the 1950s, a little boy, a teenager in the 1960s, we hunted. We killed rabbits, squirrels, we ate them. It was a big part of our life. And so we'd spent a lot of our life hunting. And we're pretty far removed from that now. And so these young men now haven't really experienced that kind of stuff like what we had.
Taking a life.
Yeah.
Of any life. You're just, you stop a beating heart is what I've heard it referred to.
Right.
That hunting is similar.
Right.
And in that way, because you're stopping something from breathing.
Sure. And we were dealing with these Viet Cong were Buddhist, and they were glad to give up their life. And it's only one way to deal with that.
You're more than happy to help them meet their Lord.
Yeah, and go see whatever his name is. Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised that you were telling me that there'd be small groups going to attack these bases at such close. Like, how would they get from the perimeter where the razor wire was, which is already past you, then past the razor wire, perimeter and be able to make it into a hospital without being, figured out.
Well, they had their spot they were going to go through already. And so they know there's a guy up in that tower. And they know that what they knew where we were, and they watched. It was their country, and so they'd pick the spot that they're going to go through, and then they'd bring heavy ordnance down on that particular area, and they'd rush through.
Wow!
And didn't care if they got out of there or not, just as long as they did some destruction. We had them. There were mountains surrounding the place, and from where I'd be in the jungle, if they were firing some rockets into the base, I could see the flash up on the mountain where they launched it. And I would get my little
this thing I have right here. What's it called?
I can't remember what it was called, but it's a compass.
It's a compass
with the little magnifying
military
glass.
Issued.
Yeah, where you could show the coordinates of where that what flash was. And I would call in the coordinates of where that flash was, and then they'd bring fire down on that spot up there on the mountain.
But flying A-4 or whatever? Helicopters?
They'd launch, all kinds of stuff in there.
How long were you deployed? How many tours? 1 year.
1 year.
Is that one tour or two tours?
1 year. One tour.
One year is a tour. Mm-hmm. I will tell anybody, I have not served in a war.
Yeah.
And don't have any idea what it's like, so I didn't know the tour was 1 year.
Yeah, and you do a year like that. I can only describe it like you're skiing behind a boat, and all of a sudden the boat stops, and you got all that rope.
Mm-hmm.
You go from doing 100 miles an hour to 0 miles an hour when you came back from Vietnam.
Talk about that. So you come back after a year. What year was it you came back?
At the end of 70.
Okay, so we're right in the middle of just everything as far as protest and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So what were your reactions when you came back and saw what the students, for the most part, were reacting to your, your serving?
Yeah, well, it wasn't really serving. We had to go.
Well, right. Well, but, you could have. We had the conversation on the way up here. You had a choice.
You had a choice. But, yeah.
You made yours.
Yeah, sure. Everybody made their own personal choice. But, yeah, it was no big deal to me really at all.
You just came back and went to work.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
But, I was addicted to adrenaline. I really was. And I did some pretty crazy things after I got back.
Okay, just because I had the fix of adrenaline in the war.
I had to get the adrenaline flow going. And I did. And I got in trouble with the law.
Did you get a break because you were a
vet?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I was a petroleum engineer, and I was living up in Hideaway Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And just bored to tears. And I said, I went down to a junkyard and bought a Camaro and got all the numbers off of it. And then I looked in the phone book for Camaro for sale. And this dentist up in Dallas had one for sale. And so I caught an airplane, flew up there and took a taxi over there. And she handed me the keys, and I just took the car and went home.
Change the numbers.
Yeah.
That's an adrenaline junkie because you're going to get caught.
Oh, yeah.
You're just managing your life until you do.
And so I did that for, a few years and finally got caught, but did some community service and got that out of my way and started enjoying life.
And calmed down a little bit?
Yeah, calmed down a lot. Calmed down a lot. I went to work selling air conditioners and ended up owning one of the biggest companies in Tyler.
Yes, sir. So as we're kind of winding down here now, what do you see today?
With how,
just
how,
everything.
How the
government. I ask it just the way I wanted to ask it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mess.
It's a mess.
It's a mess. And I think just about the whole country sees that. Everything's upside down and wrong. And hopefully we can survive till we get things changed.
Do you see a path forward?
I do.
How do you see that path forward?
When we change the people that are running the country.
Overall. And that's
Yeah.
That's not one side or the other, or is it one side or the other?
Pretty much one side or the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
One side or the other. In other words, both sides?
No.
Okay.
No.
I got you.
No.
So
I don't see the way this president's running our country. I think it's just terrible. And a lot of people think that too. Some people think the other way, but we have that option here.
And of course, you've fought for that option.
Sure.
And but you think we're headed in the wrong way, in what capacity?
Well, the way the country's being run.
Okay.
And the attitudes.
What about the people in the country? What about the young people is what I'm talking about, the 20-year-olds you see now. Do you come in contact much with any of them?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
What's your opinion on them?
I've got kids.
Okay.
They're workers. They're getting jobs. They're working. They're not wanting to get benefits. When I own C. Woods, I brought plenty of young people in and taught them a trade. And it was very, very dedicated young people.
That's one thing we've seen, a devaluation of the trades.
Sure.
The last 30 years.
Sure.
That's something you see more than anything, right?
Sure. Sure. But the some of the techs at C. Woods now are making maybe $7,000-$8,000 a month.
Yep. Like I tell kids all the time, you can go into the trades and go to college. Nothing wrong with college.
Sure.
And college is great for people that want to go to college, but college is not for everybody. And if it's not, don't waste your time there. Get in the trades, learn a trade, buy a business eventually, mm-hmm. and you'll be a wealthy man.
Sure.
You're a woman.
Yeah, the American dream's still here.
That's what I was kind of questioning. So that American dream is still here, but I know that you were drafted, but what I was kind of searching around to was, do you see the patriotism that you saw then?
No. There's a certain amount of it, but not on the scale of what we saw.
And applied differently.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
So that's what, I'm honored to be able to do the interview today and be able to spend some time with you. And I wanted to thank you for that time. And also, it's been very refreshing. I had a stereotypical idea of what you would be like before I picked you up.
Did I fulfill it? Or
No, you were the antithesis of it.
Okay.
I pictured a grumpy, heavyset, kind of bellowing, the world sucks kind of guy. And instead, what I meet is someone that I have some things in common with.
Sure.
That is...
I'm a 75-year-old guy who's in good shape and still got my faculties about me.
That's right. And and open to things. It seems like you would be open to any kind of mature discussion about things.
Sure. It's fun.
And in my opinion, that's what we don't have anymore.
Yeah.
That's why we're in this mess is you cannot like what President Biden does.
Sure.
You cannot like what former President Trump did. But you don't have to dislike the person thinks that.
Sure. If you were a Biden supporter and I'm a Trump supporter, I'd respect what you have to say, you know?
We just vote differently.
I won't dislike you.
Correct. Yeah. Because and that's what I'm getting at is that you're from a generation where if you have a problem, vote.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you went over there and fought for.
Sure.
And all the loss, I forget how many young men died in Vietnam. Was it 50,000?
Somewhere around there.
Somewhere
58,000.
58,000.
Last thing I read, yeah.
They aren't with us this weekend.
No.
Like you are to remember them. Can you tell me, just to wrap it up, how you would like them to be remembered?
As heroes, as patriots. And that's exactly what they were. And they went and served for this country. And what kind of life do you have but to give it for your country?
So take a second this weekend and think about the sacrifice that these guys made.
What all's happened where you could get to be where you are right now?
Was thanks to you and guys like you.
Well, I'd like to think that, yeah.
George, thank you so much for the interview. To everyone listening out there, have an enjoyable Memorial Day, and do not forget the sacrifice that allows you to be able to enjoy it.
Yep. God bless America.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.